Hey everybody, welcome to episode 16 of the JV Club. I am taking a break from the Burning Love related podcast this week because I've been traveling a bunch, as have my Burning Love castmates, but I am hoping to do more of those as the weeks go on. But you know what? It's actually good because this gives me the opportunity to release an episode I've been sitting on for, if you can believe it, over a year. Seriously, Janet, a year? Yes. It's one of the first episodes I recorded, and for some reason I haven't released it yet. Actually, if I'm being honest, the reason is that I got really self-conscious about all of the stuff that I apologize for with all my early episodes, the yes, the mm-hmms. I mean, really, even more of those than I do now, which is still a lot. We also talk about work/Hollywood more than in my other episodes, but the reality is I am so crazy about Melanie, and we became even closer after we recorded this podcast in this year that's followed. She's just a dear friend. I just feel like it's time to get this episode out, so I hope you guys enjoy it. I'm afraid there are yet more Anne of Green Gables and goth references. Which, by the way, who knew a podcast would cover those two totally disparate things so incredibly often? I want to encourage you to check out the JV Club Facebook page and the JV Club Pinterest boards. And I also want to throw some shout outs out there, particularly to some folks who made some great karaoke song suggestions following Beth and Erica's episode last week. Scott U, Victoria, Lisa M, Jeremy, Melissa, Chris P, Kristen, Jacqueline, K.R. McNamee, Sam, Jaden, and Ford.1, who, I mean, somebody had to suggest I Will Survive, right? Ford.1, you were that person. So thanks for that. And then just some great general comments, feedback, and emails from Ben Glove, E-H-R-R, Aoife, all the way in Ireland, whose name is awesome, A-O-I-F-E. I'm now obsessed with the name Aoife. Marilia, who's also elsewhere. And by the way, that reminds me, guys, for those of you who are listening to this podcast who don't live in the States, I am so sorry that Burning Love was available to watch online to non-US countries and then suddenly was yanked. And I know I've said this via Twitter, but everybody involved with the production is really anxious to get it back out to you. And we're doing everything we can. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a lot of power here, but I'm just trying to figure out a way for you to see it. So I'm really sorry about that. Samantha, great email. Katie on Facebook. Mackenzie, Bobby, Erica, Grover, Rick, Ashley, and Chase. And of course, for all the amazing iTunes and Nerdist feedback. I don't have time to throw specific shout outs there because there's been so much great stuff, but I will get back to that next week. And then thanks for bearing with me on this long intro, guys. The last thing I want to do is just I wanted to dedicate this episode of the podcast to one of the best and really most amazing, inspiring women I have ever known. Her name was Mary Weaver, and she passed away 2 years ago, and this week marked that anniversary. So just wanted to send big, big love to her family, which is basically my surrogate family. And guys, you know, not to get preachy, but don't be afraid to tell the people in your life who've made you a better human being how much you love them. Okay, I will talk to you guys soon and enjoy the episode.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Guys, you know I like to put my foot in my mouth as much as humanly possible. And my guest, Melanie Linsky, when we first met, I met her at someone's birthday party. And I totally geeked out on her, which I don't normally do with people, but I just sort of couldn't help myself. I came up to her and I introduced myself, and she was so lovely. And I said something to the effect of, you know, I meet so many people here. I know so many comedians, and I know so many, you know, people who were on kind of lame sitcoms, and I'm so overwhelmed and excited right now. It was like right when I had moved down. I said, I'm so overwhelmed and excited to meet you because you're the star of one of my all-time favorite movies. It's so amazing and it's so exciting. I just have to geek out on you because I don't want to, you know, I never want to do that with people who are on these like lame sitcoms that are, you know, just not funny. And here's this amazing work of art that you've been a part of. And it was Heavenly Creatures that I was talking about. And I talked about it with her for a while. And then she was like, yeah, it's funny. I'm actually also on one of those sitcoms. And and the show that she was on was 2 and a Half Men, which was like the biggest show on television. And I had no idea, had never seen it and had no idea she was on it. So I'm classy.
Way, all I remember is how sweet you were to me. I do remember now because it was hilarious, but I would never, I just remember you were like so sweet and great.
Oh,
and
well.
I was excited to meet you.
That's very gracious of you.
You're so sweet. I'm totally blushing.
I don't think anyone's going to be able to understand you unless you use an American accent.
Oh, sorry.
You just use that the entire time. Paul is laughing out loud.
Don't people know now because they have seen Flight of the Conchords?
Yes.
People know New Zealand accents.
That's true. Yeah. And that is the party that we were at was Jermaine Clement's birthday party probably like 5 years ago.
So long ago.
Yeah. I don't even know if they had their show yet.
I don't think so.
They did. I think they were figuring it out or something. Yeah.
Doing things at Largo. And Brett told that funny story about when he was on the cover of a magazine as a child. He was like a child model for a little while. And Jermaine got jealous.
He
was like, how'd you get that job? Did you have an agent? Who was your agent?
That's really funny. Well, he is a very pretty young man,
He's
Brett.
A pretty man.
Also, I thought his name was Britt because yeah. I remember when I met him in Aspen, I didn't know, and I called him that for about 3 hours, and then he told me everyone does that, and then I felt really unspecial for that reason, too. Aww. Like, oh, I accidentally called you the wrong name, but it's what every American does, so no. I'm just another American puppy dog jumping around. Again, we, you know, Heavenly Creatures, I'm sure, is something that people bring up for you a lot just because it's such a specific, unique, amazing movie. And I don't know if you have, do you have the experience where you get tired of being referred to as the actress from that movie with as much as you've done since, or is it kind of okay?
No, 'cause you know how, I mean, I think it's really, it kind of amazes me how it has stayed with people.
Yeah.
Like it's been almost 20 years.
Yeah,
since I made that movie,
I don't know.
So weird to me.
I know, and we're the same age. So I saw it when it came out in the theater, and yeah. I was your age. So it's not like I was seeing something like Harold and Maude, which is this classic that's
right.
lived forever up until I saw it, and since
I
was looking at you as this is somebody who's the same age as me who's doing acting work. I can't imagine ever being capable of no matter how long I live. It's just stunning. But it's interesting, and I don't want to spend much time talking about your career unless you want to, but the reason that I bring that up, I've just got a couple of films that you did that I would love to sort of work into conversation because they are so nicely representative of kind of the teen years one reason or another, be it Win-Win or But I'm a Cheerleader or Heavenly Creatures. And that movie just actually kind of leads me into where you're from and in what your teenagerhood must have been like because you're from New Zealand.
Yes.
New Plymouth?
New Plymouth, yeah.
And where do your parents still live there? Or are your parents together?
My parents are together.
And they're in New Zealand?
They're in New Zealand.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I'm the oldest of five.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I knew that.
One sister. Yeah.
Okay. Where are they? Are they spread out all over?
Two of my brothers are in Australia, and my littlest brother and my little sister are in Wellington in New Zealand.
Okay. So you got this, you started working, had you worked before? I mean, people talk about that this was a big breakthrough role for you. Had you worked at all before you got this role, or was this that you were
no.
you just sort of slingshot into the public eye?
It was a little bit crazy. I was in my second to last year of high school, and New Plymouth is quite a like isolated place. New Plymouth.
Scott the dog is loves women and has fallen desperately in love with Melanie and is demanding attention.
Well, he came over because the cat was trying to say hi.
Yeah, there's a huge friendly competition, but
it's
an intense
cute.
Competition.
But anyway, the place that I come from is quite provincial, and people are just not really actors there. But it was all It was all I ever dreamed of doing. It was all I ever wanted to do. And I was in my second to last year of high school, and people were saying, you need to decide what you want to do with your life, and are you going to be an actor or, you know, whatever. And I said, yes, I do think I want to be an actor. And everyone around me was saying I was crazy and I wanted to go to drama school and whatever else. And then it was crazy. Peter Jackson's partner, Fran, came to my high school, and she was traveling around New Zealand auditioning people. And they auditioned me at high school.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, oh, this would be a good thing to put on my drama school application, that I auditioned for, you know, a real movie.
Oh, I love that you didn't take it all the way through to getting it.
You
thought, well, but I'll have had this experience
like,
of auditioning.
Yeah, this is a good thing for me to learn. I asked them all kinds of questions, but then I got it. It was really crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
But even after that, people were like, well, that was good. New Zealanders are funny, you know. It's like, well, good job, but don't think that that's going to carry on.
Right.
And I was like, well, I did a movie. But they're like, nope, doesn't happen. People don't become actors.
Oh, wow. Well, so tell me more about New Plymouth and about I think I'd love to hear a little bit about being at an all-girls school and high school. And I mean, how does that compare, knowing that the majority of young women who would be listening to this podcast are American young women, you know, in their teens, in their 20s. What do you kind of perceive as the difference? What was it like for you?
I mean, I don't know much about American high schools, but it seems like it was very different from what my husband has told me.
Yeah.
Like, girls come to school, like, they get up in the morning to put their makeup on and stuff.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
So not like that for you at all.
No.
How big was your school?
I don't know.
By the way, I don't know how many people went to my high school, so
yeah,
I don't know why I expect you to know that.
I don't know. Seems like something you
but
should know.
But smallish classes, like you know, like 20 girls in a class?
There
or...
were like 30 in a class,
okay.
I guess. It was a pretty big high school. And the boys' high school was just across a cemetery.
Uh-huh, perfect.
Us. So there were some meetups in the cemetery.
Oh, I
which
bet.
Which is really creepy and gross.
Did you feel like, in going to an all-girls school, did you feel like that encouraged a more restrictive behavior, or did the opposite happen and everybody kind of went crazy?
It was the opposite. For some reason, teenagers where I grew up were pretty crazy anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I only kind of realized it when I came over here and people were talking about their teenage years, and I would tell, you know, stories I thought were like fun little stories, and people would be like, what happened? Like,
really?
Yeah. We were kind of wild.
Yeah. Do you think it's that small town thing of sort of that you have fewer outlets for the crazy hormones and adolescence and identity stuff, and so you're acting out differently than if you like were a teenager in Manhattan or something?
I think so, because there's just, I mean, we were all, the people that I grew up with, a lot of them now are musicians and artists and all kinds of interesting things, and it was the sort of creative group of people. But we were in this very small place, and New Plymouth in recent years has been completely revitalized, and it's lovely and really nice to visit. But when we were growing up, it was quite depressed, and there were like a lot of suicides, and it was kind of a dark place to be.
Yeah.
And people did a lot of drugs, and it was kind of intense.
So what were you, so you knew that you had like a passion, you had a passion for acting from a very, very young age. Who are your heroes, or what were you looking at as an example of what felt like it was a fit for you about that?
It was funny. When I was little, my dad was a medical student and we moved around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always was the new kid, and I felt very shy and awkward. Mm-hmm. And I was very shy and awkward. Like, I remember when I was six and I was at a new school, and at lunchtime, I tried to go up to the staff room because there was this teacher who was nice to me.
Aww.
And I was like, maybe I can have lunch with her, because it was so horrible having lunch by myself
so lonely.
Every day.
Yeah.
It was so lonely. And she was like, oh my God. I remember it so clearly, this look on her face. She was like, you can't.
How old were you, do you think?
It's not going to make things easier for you.
Yeah.
I was six.
Oh,
but I just
my
was
gosh.
Like, oh, she's my friend. And I had this weird thing where I had to like go to different classes for different subjects, because they were doing a thing in New Zealand where if you were like good at something, you would study it in a different age group. So I was doing some classes with like 9-year-olds, and then some with like six. And, you know, it's all very...
It makes it hard with your peer groups to connect. And
you're being made fun of. And, you know, it's like it was a very awkward time and we were moving. And at some point, I can't remember when, there was like a school play and I was in it. And I felt this like release from, I just became a different person. And I had this confidence, and it was like all my responsibilities and all the things I was worried about myself just like dropped away.
Yeah.
And everyone was like very different to me after that. Everyone was like, oh, because I suddenly was like a different person.
And how old were you when you think?
That was when I was six.
Still when you're six. Yeah. Isn't that amazing to be that young and to still, I think I had a similar experience because my parents were splitting up and I was just so angry all the time and so, but not knowing why, because when you're that little, you don't really know where your emotions come from, I think, a lot of the time. Yeah. And I think performing was that sort of, oh, all I have to think about and all I can think about right now, and maybe that's sports for other kids or whatever else, but it felt like, oh, I don't have to be me at all right now. Literally.
That's exactly it. Like, people always say to me, oh, you're so shy, and like, why are you an actor if you're so shy and you don't want to be the center of attention? And it's for that reason, because the times when you're actually acting, you get to become someone else and you lose all your little like insecurities.
Yeah.
And so then after that, I just always tried to do any play there. What, like, I went to church with my grandparents because then I could do the church plays. Like,
love
I was
it.
Really sneaky about it. I just did everything I could. And I didn't really, I would see movies and stuff like that, but I mostly was reading. Like, I read a lot of plays and I read a lot of books, and I would become obsessed with characters and become obsessed with like particular writers and read everything. And
did you ever play? I mean, I know you were the oldest of your siblings. Did you ever sort of, did you have like lots of imaginary games that you would do or like sort of? And I'm saying this because I'm everything you're saying really hits home for me. And I used to, I was obsessed with Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah,
I don't, did you read those books, right? Because, I mean, she sort of gives you, she's the character that gives you permission as a young girl to kind of just be wildly imaginative and sort of do crazy, weird performancey things on your own and feel like that's normal because you're special. And I would dress up like her. My interpretation of whatever that was maybe like a long jumper and, you know, a shirt underneath. And then I somehow saved up the money to buy some old like 1900s shoes or something that like painfully tight, and I would lace them up, and then I would just go outside into the alley because that's like where I could go where there wouldn't be anyone, and just act out pretending that I was Anne, like living in this foresty kind of world. And then there was a certain period of time where I went through this phase where I would be wearing this costume and I would be out in my dad's front yard, and when a car drove by, I would just freeze, like whatever I was doing.
Yep.
And somehow in my mind, I was invisible. I was frozen like a statue.
I totally.
And people would like slow down and drive by me really slowly, and I'd just be frozen.
But what commitment.
I know.
That's amazing.
Oh, commitment maybe was what I deserved at that point, to be committed somewhere. It was definitely.
I get it. Like, I would do things like that. I did a thing where I would look in the mirror until my face became unfamiliar to me.
Yes.
And then I would start talking to myself.
Oh, I
sound
it.
Like a crazy person.
No, I feel like I sound like a crazy person, but that makes perfect sense to me.
It's a little bit crazy. And I also would do a thing when we were on long car trips. I would look out the window in preparation for the future when I was filmed, looking out a window in a car and not let my eyes like catch on anything.
I totally get. Oh, wow. That's a lot of mature. That's a lot of intellectual maturity also in terms of like.
Strange.
Did you do a thing where I felt like I should have practiced more blinking less?
Oh,
because of the close up thing, right? You see people in close up and you're like, oh, they're just not blinking. That's really intense, but it's effective.
I saw my friend Corey Stoll in Midnight in Paris recently.
Yeah, I loved that movie.
He was so sweet and he was so great.
Yeah,
and he played Hemingway.
Amazing. He was amazing.
He was so great. And he was not blinking at all.
He didn't. It was just
long speeches where he's just like,
yeah.
And I was like, oh,
And what about boys? Where does that, how did that work it in? If you, you moved a lot when you were little and you were shy, but then you were going to the all-girls school, but then people were getting nutsy and crazy. Did you have lots of crushes? Did you have little meetings at the cemetery?
I was like boy crazy.
Yeah.
My entire life. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always talk about how I kept journals and I thought that I was saying all these profound things. And when I look back, it's just like a couple of other thoughts in between rants about boys.
That's whether, what I found this old suitcase last time I went home from my teenage years. It was like a time capsule. I haven't looked at it since I was 17, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
And it was from...
What was in it?
It was from like 14 to 16.
Uh-huh.
And it was like love letters from boys and letters from friends. Like it was back in the days when you would write each other letters.
Oh, yeah.
My friends and I would go on vacation away from each other and just write these like tomes to each other.
Yeah.
Like everything that had been happening. And it was so amazing to see.
It is, isn't it? And I wonder, I mean, I don't know if this makes us the grouchy old ladies, but... I'd love to hear, and if anybody is listening to this and wants to write me, I am seriously so curious how much, like, do you guys, I mean, I feel like, is there still note writing in school, or are you just straight up texting each other?
Yeah.
Are you, if somebody goes away, it's just email. Like, does anybody, I mean, when I try to write a whole letter now to my mom because she doesn't have email, my hand gets cramped so quickly because I literally don't. I'm just not writing by hand the way I used to.
I know.
And that makes me feel like I came from the time of horses and carriages, just saying that out loud. But it's true.
No, it's terrifying.
What you're describing, I too have, I mean, the box is full of memories like that. It is a little bit different than cracking open an email.
It's so different. Right? And just, you know, where your friends would like stop writing and then they'd be like, okay, I'm back now. And then this happened. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Where do I start? So much happened.
Like long, long letters to each other. And these letters from boys, these teenage boys who are just like not knowing how to articulate.
Yeah.
Just these awkward, sweet letters and bad poetry and old dried up flowers and stuff.
Yes.
I was like, oh my God.
That's lovely.
It was really fun.
I'm so glad you found that and that you still have that.
Yeah.
Did you? So if you were boy crazy, did you have steady boyfriends that you kind of kept for a while, or was it sort of all over the map?
It was all over the map.
And then what happened when you got the film? You were 16, 17?
I was 15.
You were 15.
Yeah, I turned 16 making it.
And so how did that change people at the school, and what was that? I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit a second ago.
Yeah.
But in terms of how people, like, did the girls react one way and the boys react another, or did some, you know, what was it like?
Well, it was funny because it wasn't like a glamorous role,
yeah.
to say the least.
No, you're right.
So it's not like I was like some gorgeous like movie star who I was doing this very complicated thing, and it was like very intense, and a lot of kids just didn't really know how to process it. I got a lot of like, oh, you kissed a girl, I saw your tits.
I mean, that's
like
the
that.
Thing. It's that's like, hardcore. Like, what? If you guys haven't seen the movie, please do. Because you see Mel's tits. I don't know why. that's a weird ramping up into recommending it. But yeah, I mean, it's such an emotional film. And it is such a complicated character. And for them to just cast you out of high school and think, okay, she's going to be able to, I mean, you guys, you and Kate carried the film, obviously, and what was it like? I mean, were you afraid? Did you feel afraid when you got the part? Were you excited, but did you feel insecure about it? Or did you feel like, this is what I've been waiting for and I know I'm going to be able to get through this?
I only felt insecure at one point. I felt so excited, and especially because it was at that time in my life that I was talking about where everyone was like, well, that's not.
Right.
And I just
you
felt
can't
like,
do that. Yeah.
Oh my God, I have this opportunity. I'm actually going to do it.
Yeah.
And I never thought, I was thinking the whole time, like, this may be the only time I ever get to do this.
Yeah.
So how amazing.
Yeah.
You know? And I was so, it was such a perfect time in my life. Like, a friend of mine had just passed away, which is really tragic, and my boyfriend's best friend. And it was like there was a lot of stuff going on, and I was going through a lot of turmoil and some family things. And
yeah,
I felt so excited. Even at that point, I sort of understood that that thing of like having a character to express all that stuff through. And I was like, oh my God, what a
gift
this is. And Peter and Fran were so careful. Like I auditioned a couple of times and they made sure I could do it and not go crazy. And they brought in an acting coach to help me kind of get some kind of technique instead of just like breaking down. And
yeah,
it was really good. But when we started working, they brought in this one acting coach who didn't last for very long because she said to me, she was like, well, I hope you know how lucky you are because you're not a professional actress. And oh, if you Lord. Don't do it, we need to prove that you're going to do a good job now because otherwise they're going to fire you. And it had never crossed my mind. I was like, really?
Yeah.
And I got so upset and so self-conscious about it. And then in our rehearsals, I was like, I need to show them this thing.
Oh, that's dreadful.
Or I'm going to get fired. And then, you know, luckily Peter and Fran came to me and said, how's everything going? And I said, well, I'm so nervous about you guys firing me. Like, I hope I'm sure. And they were like, huh?
Oh, my gosh.
So she actually got fired, which I don't feel great about. But, like, I have a friend who worked with her years later, and she said, oh, I feel so bad. That's not what I meant. You know, they were very specific about we need to know that she's capable and – you know, I understand.
She probably thought it was just tough love.
Yeah,
like, we're going to get there together because otherwise, yeah.
But I didn't operate in that way. And I was so, and I'm the kind of actor where, you know, if I hear that kind of thing, I get so intimidated.
Yeah.
And I'm not able to do good work because I'm like, is this what you want? Is this what you want? And it's horrible.
Yeah. It's the opposite of what's supposed to happen in terms of you being able to lose yourself in something. Instead, you're more you than ever and the more vulnerable, afraid you than ever.
Yeah.
That's such a great point. So you really had this extraordinary role that was intense, but that sounds like it was cathartic.
It was very cathartic.
And that's huge. You were kind of saying about how your peers were behaving about it.
Yeah,
and
people were.
After it came out, you were still in school, obviously, so everyone saw it, or assumedly some people saw it. And
it came out when I was in my last year of high school. Everyone saw it.
Were there boys who were like, "Hey, you made out with a girl? That's pretty." They were like, "Hey, are you crazy?"
It's funny. People in New Zealand are so, they really go out of their way to not be impressed by things.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of, I don't know. People were very careful to let me know that wasn't a big deal to them.
Interesting.
And I luckily had an amazing group of friends who are still some of my closest friends who were supportive and amazing. And, but it was a weird time. And, you know, in the last year of high school, I had to go to New York and I had to go to the Venice Film Festival and things that are very exciting and wonderful.
Had you traveled before then much outside of New Zealand?
When I was a child, I did. When my dad was studying, we traveled all over the place.
Oh, you were beyond. For some reason in my mind, you were just sort of still in New Zealand when he was.
No, we lived in London for
you
a little
did.
While. Yeah.
So you settled into New Plymouth and stayed there. At
when
what
I was
age?
Like seven.
Okay,
so
but
I was
all
still
the
really
time
young.
Before that, you had done London and
different
where else?
Parts of. Well, we traveled around Europe like for a couple of months or something.
Do you remember much of that?
I kind of do. I remember like bits and pieces of it and just sort of being fascinated and thinking, oh, I've been to this place now. I've been to that place now.
I can tell my best friend, the teacher, all about that
exactly.
in the staff
like,
room
I'm
at lunch.
To see my teacher.
The Lonely Globetrotter. and then you decided to, I'm sure you had people saying, hey, don't be a teenager anymore, be a professional actress. And were the people in New Zealand? So because it was still localized and was a small enough movie that it wasn't like you were doing some big splashy New York film.
Right.
Nobody was saying, come be in this place and act full time instead. The people in New Zealand were like, yeah, you did a movie. Now what about school?
That was exactly what it
Got
was.
It.
And even the people that I worked with on the movie were kind of like, thank you so much. You did a really great job and don't let it ruin your life. And
off you go.
Go to university.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was kind of like, wow, but this is all I've ever wanted to do. And then I did it.
Yeah.
And it was very hard to let go of that, but I felt like I had to.
That's so interesting. Did you have a sense of it? Oh, what if I come back to it and it's not there anymore? What if I have to keep this momentum the way I think some people feel here.
I assumed it wouldn't be there. I mean, I didn't have any concept of momentum at that time.
Yeah,
it was funny, though, because Kate Winslet, who was in the movie with me, was a professional actress, and she'd been a professional actress since she was 12 years old, and she was on television shows, and she had headshots, and she was the most professional, ambitious person. And
God, it works so well. Sorry, just in terms of the characters, though, it works so well because she was that person, that character, and she needed the character that was the sort of more naive, less, you know, less experienced.
Yeah.
The mirror image of where she was and the character she played and where you were and the character you played is sort of flawless, right?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. It was very much where we were in our lives.
But you saw her and you saw that it was possible to sort of have done that and to continue to do.
But at the same time, everyone was behaving very differently to her because she was professional and she lived in London by herself and she was acting. And
wow.
So I kind of felt like it wasn't my place, you know. Yeah. I was sort of like, well, who do I think I am that I can just show up and be Kate when she's put all this work into it? And so it was even more of an incentive to kind of be like, oh, okay, and just sort of back away.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of like her proud friend, and not that there should be like a, you know, if she's doing it, I saw someone who
I can so
was in the middle
that.
Of their career path.
Sure.
And she was like, and now I'm going to do this. And this is my first film and I'm going to go and my second film is going to be blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I don't even, like, I don't think I'm ever going to do another movie. So it just felt, but I wanted to act. Like I really, and I went back to high school and I did plays and stuff and I just missed it. I went to university and I missed it.
And you didn't, and you could, did you think about majoring in theater? Did you have that option? Did you major in English Lit?
English, yeah. But then I dropped out of university. But if I had gone on, I would have done like a film and theater degree.
Yeah. And so when you left, was that a hard decision? And how were your how was your family about that?
They
by that
it was
time,
crazy.
They did.
Yeah. They thought it was not a
Where
good
were
idea.
You in school? You were, I wrote it down. Victoria.
Yeah, in Wellington. I did 1 year. I had an agent in America, and she was always like, oh, you should come over and you should try it out and you can stay with me. And I was like, well. And then I started to send audition tapes in my first year of university, and I sent an audition tape for The Crucible, the Daniel Day-Lewis Crucible.
Sure.
And I got like shortlisted, and I had to come to LA to audition with Daniel Day-Lewis.
Amazing.
And that was kind of the moment where I was like, okay, I feel if other people are sort of like really considering.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And then I started to think that maybe I could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how old were you when you came, when you left Wellington? How old were you?
I think I was 18 when I came here for the first time.
Yeah. And so you felt, how did you feel? I mean, I guess what I'm interested in just about that stuff is the idea of having traveled so much when you're little, so kind of having an organic comfort maybe with travel and that, but then settling in still very young and kind of having to get over being the outsider.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting, your whole, because to your point, you don't have necessarily this sort of balls out, like, I'm an actress world, get used to it, which can either be a real confidence or a protector. You don't have that, have that shell, no matter what it is, you know, whether it's a shell or whether it's real.
Oh my God.
So the idea to me of having grown up in kind of a provincial town, doing a movie but in sort of a sheltered environment, comparing yourself to Kate and going, okay, well, I'm clearly not that person yet or whatever that means, or that's not been my path.
And that then felt like an actress to me.
Yeah.
You know, this is what you need to be, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then to have the courage to be in school, be in college, and feel maybe an impatience if you left, I guess I can, it would seem that there might be an impatience of, okay, now I'm, as I get older and I'm recognizing this is important and I'm getting these opportunities, that final moment of kind of, okay, I'm 18, I'm going to go live. Did you move to Los Angeles or did you go?
I did. I came to Los Angeles for 3 months because that was the time on my temporary visa. Yeah.
And did you stay with your agent?
I did.
And how did it feel to kind of have made that jump?
I did not know what I was doing.
Did you have friends here?
No.
You didn't really? Oh, my gosh.
I didn't know anybody. I was staying with my agent, who's very sweet. I didn't know how to drive. I couldn't get around.
Oh, my gosh.
I would go to auditions, and I remember the first audition I went to, and I had no makeup on, and I just was like, and it was for like a TV Western, and all the girls were in like old-timey outfits, but with like full faces of makeup, and right. Their hair was all done up and stuff, and I was like, oh, I am not doing this right. This right. is really...
Did you wear a lot of makeup when you were a teen?
No.
You didn't, yeah. Because you were saying you had a different idea of that yeah. American teens kind of getting up to put on their faces and going yeah. in. And
I was kind of a goth for a while, so I did like gothy kind of makeup.
Oh,
a
yeah,
bit.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
Oh, really?
When awesome. When were you?
Like 15.
What kind of music were you listening to? Like Depeche Mode? And
I would listen to like Bauhaus and uh-huh. Sisters of Mercy. Yep. And I still love them. And I got a little into like Skinny Puppy and I the kind of too. More hardcore.
I couldn't get, you know, it's funny because when I look back at the stuff, like I can definitely still enjoy Bauhaus and Sisters yeah. of Mercy. And I love Depeche Mode and The Cure. And But then when I think about like the foray into like... Skinny Puppy and like, oh, I love Daisy Chain for Satan and stuff like that. It's like, how do you live in that place for very yeah. long? Like, how are you a lifelong fan of Skinny Puppy? Does it just exist for certain people as like, I needed that pocket of time where I didn't even really, I don't know if I could have even identified in words why it was important or why I liked yeah. it, but it just somehow was about all the... cacophony inside yeah. me that needed to like, you know, that static electricity of hormones is what I always kind of think.
I went through a period of time where I was obsessed with Laibach.
Oh, you know that? Sure.
And they did that sure. cover album of that Beatles album. I can't remember. They did it like beginning to end, a whole cover album yeah. of it. But I listened to it recently and I was like wow.
Doesn't hold up.
Wow.
For you, I mean, maybe.
It's just so intense. It's yeah. like, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. And we were girls. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I get, you know, the boys, I totally get it. Yeah. Like, I was obsessed with the Clockwork Orange. Like, I thought, that's my dream guy. So horrible because I was a pretty nice kid. I mean, I wasn't yeah. a bully and I had been picked on when I was little. So it's not like,
yeah.
I don't know why I would be like, it's fiction. Sure, he's raping an old lady, but that eyelash is so hot. Like,
I understand.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The extreme of, and I'm not, girls, if you've got like the, you know, the villain that you love, I'm just saying I'm not judging you. I know I'm laughing at myself, but I am not judging you because I seriously was like, I think I wanted to marry him, and then like I graduated to Hannibal Lecter.
Oh my like, god.
I was obsessed with Anthony Hopkins. I think as much for, you know, I mean the danger certainly, because like in real life if a man right. who ate people was like, would you like to go on a date?
You'd be like, oh no.
It would probably pass. Yeah. I'd be like, I have to go put on my black lipstick now. But but, you know, something about the, you know, that something about that danger. And I think Laibach yeah. and Skinny Puppy, like something about just raw aggression and evil somehow has to be room for exploration of that. Yeah. Even if you're, in my case, I was like a, you know, straight A student, but I still just yeah. had this stuff that spoke to, I guess.
Yeah.
So I love that you went through a goth phase. I'm glad we got that out. It's funny, isn't it, too? Because I think I was a little confused by makeup also, but something about like black eyeliner or a black lipstick or like a really pale face like that yeah. wasn't necessarily pretty, but it made sense to me.
Exactly. And also for me, like my mother is, you know, she's very beautiful and she always was very like made up and tanning and dieting, and she had a very particular look, and it was subconscious at the time,
sure,
but it's so
sure.
obvious, but I was like really rebelling against that.
Yeah.
Like really, really. And, you know, around the time of Heavenly Creatures and
another
like,
little parallel there
on.
With
wear not, yeah. some here, you know, when we had events, I would wear sneakers with like, I'd put a dress on, but then I'd wear big sneakers. And
yeah.
I was like, fuck you. Like,
yeah,
never wanted to try to like pretty myself up.
And yeah.
I remember like our version of a prom, a school ball. I came downstairs for the school ball, and my mother just burst into tears because she was so upset. Because I was wearing like 6 ballet tutus and like this antique lace like top, and I had this like dark eyeliner. And
oh my God. Do you have a picture of that somewhere?
I don't know why.
That is a shame.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I know. I think I have some outfits. I was trying to show someone something, and I was really frustrated by the lack of representation of that time of my life. Like, yeah. I have a couple, but I feel like I wish I had more, and yeah. I wish I had more of like the really extreme stuff instead of the sort of like a lot of pictures I have were like, my dad took them. So I was on a vacation with him. So it was like, I'll only wear one skull headband around my wrist instead of my dog collar or whatever. But I love that you had 6 tutus on and an antique lace. Oh, that's fantastic.
And my grandmother.
Were your girlfriends like that too? Or was everybody
kind of... A couple of my girlfriends were kind of like that. I was dating a boy who was kind of gothy, and then I got all into it and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
And then when you came here, I mean, this is sort of superficial, but maybe as a way in of like kind of how you expressed yourself and who you ended up meeting, becoming friends with here. Mm-hmm. You're 18. What were you into other than auditioning? And, you know, were you like...
I was like...
Did you think about your clothes? Was that important? Did you think about... Did you listen to a lot of music then? Were you sort of like, I'm alone and I don't know anyone, so I'm listening to my Johnny Cash CDs or whatever, you know, whatever that might have looked like for you?
Yeah, I was kind of a music nerd, like... Every place I would go to, I remember when I came to Los Angeles for the first time, I had a driver because I was doing press for 2.5, what am I talking about? For Heavenly Creatures, it's a different thing. It popped into my head for some reason. But this driver.
They're very similar, 2.5 Men, very
things.
Similar.
I get them confused in my head all the time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I sound like a crazy person. I have a little bit of a cold.
You couldn't sound less crazy, if anything.
Thank you for saying that. But I had this driver for Heavenly Creatures, and he said, if there's anywhere in the city, you know, you want to see, let me know and I'll drive you there because we have the day off or whatever. And I was like, I really want to go to Echo Park.
Yeah.
And he was like, what?
And back then, too, even more, like so much less gentrified. And
it was like 95 or something.
Yeah.
And he was like, why would you, what are you talking about? And I said, well, Beck is from there.
Oh,
and I want to
see,
I had such a crush on Beck, and I loved him so much. And so we like drove around Echo Park. And I was like,
that's
pretty
fantastic.
Now I feel like I understand
I'm close
Beck.
To him.
And I remember when I went to New York, I was like, interested in like the East Village and stuff because I read that like Stephen Malkmus had lived there.
Yeah,
I was just such a like groupie. So I came here. My agent had this lovely assistant who I'm still friends with to this day. This girl Kira, who became my one and only friend, and she gave me like a little boombox, so I could listen to my CDs.
Oh, I love it!
I know, she was amazing, and she would take me to parties with her and stuff like that, and.
Were you going to the like Hollywood parties where you were seeing a bunch of people you recognized, or were they more like our cup of tea now, which would just be a bunch
she
of cool people sitting around?
She was taking me to like good people parties.
That's good.
And sometimes
That's
there
good.
Would be like famous people there because she grew up here and she knew some actors and stuff like that. But it was always very relaxed.
I think that's kind of, I mean, that's got to be sort of a great thing to not get pulled into when you're that age, because I think it could have easily happened, and it seems to me that it speaks to your sense of self.
I guess I just I
don't know, you don't strike me as like, I wish I were out snorting a bump of cocaine right now, but I just don't have the nerve to ask anyone to take me kind of person necessarily. Wow.
I wanted to do all my coke in private.
There you go.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask you And I don't know, this is one of those things where you could so easily say you're just not right about this, Janet. Whatever idea you've got, you're not right about. So I'll let you be the first person to tell me that the secret idea I've had about people from New Zealand and Australia, and also I apologize for lumping you in together because that's also totally bogus. But and because there's certainly huge differences in terms of culture and kind of candor about my friends from New Zealand versus my friends from Australia. But something I feel like I always notice about both, and I think it's something that other people have observed, and so we could all be wrong, is that there is a sort of confidence that isn't brash, and it's not necessarily covering for something else, which is where I think a lot of the quote-unquote confidence in Americans come from, is posturing. Mm. But there's something about friends of mine who, in or out of this business that you and I are in, just seem like they know themselves maybe differently, and I would say better than a lot of Americans I know, that there's some sort of, and I think people observe it about the Nicole Kidmans and the Naomi Watts and the just a lot of Aussies who make it in the business, that there doesn't seem to be a lot of kind of crashing and burning or getting in your own way, or that there's just like a dedication that that also has a confidence attached to it. And does that mean anything to you, or are you like, Janet, you're the crazy person? Because I accept if it's true.
No, I understand. I think it's a lovely thing to say, and I think I know what you're saying. Like, I don't know, when I was growing up, I was always very concerned with being an individual. Oh, hello. Hi, cat. But that was always like my biggest thing, was like being myself and feeling like I was different from other people, and not in a like, oh, I'm so different from everyone else, but I just wanted, I don't know, and I feel like all my friends were the same kind of way, and something about the culture there, it's just sort of encouraged, I think. When I came over here when I was 18 was the first time I really was like, oh wow, there are a lot of people who are this one particular thing, and maybe I should think about being more of that thing.
Be the girl in the old West outfit with your hair done up and your makeup super pristine.
Yeah. And I don't know, it's just American girls have this sort of thing, like they take care of themselves in a particular way. Like, I don't know, like a lot of New Zealanders are bad about like getting haircuts and stuff. Like, you don't go get manicures and things like that. It's just different.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Women are different with men. Like, there's just a different sort of relationship. And
what are you? Can you elaborate on that?
It's just sort of like people hang out together a lot more. It's just a different sort of, I don't know.
People like hang out together a lot more there or here.
Like there, like that, like growing up, you're just sort of like in groups of sort of like guys and girls. Like if you start seeing someone, it's because you're like in a group of people, and then you go home together like three times, and then suddenly it's your boyfriend or whatever. It's just the sort of, it's just a different society. But I don't know about, I don't know, New Zealanders are so reserved to me. I think Australians are very confident.
Yeah, I would agree that, the way that people communicate themselves, it is definitely, there's more kind of gregariousness with Australians, but I don't know. I think it's my own, whatever my own feeling of lacking in. Someone was telling me about his ex, who is an Aussie, and he was describing her as just being really, and it totally lined up with everybody I had been friends with and I knew. It was like, she wanted to learn how to fly a plane.
That's crazy.
This is Jacinda. She wanted to learn how to fly a plane, and then she just went and did it.
That's so awesome.
And to me, that just summed it all up. I was like, that's what I'm talking about. This sort of idea of like, well, why couldn't I do that? Whereas for some reason, but everything you're saying about, you know, maybe I'll never get to make this another movie again, all of that sounds like exactly how I would have felt if I were you. But somehow, as I got older and in my teens and my 20s, and I started meeting more and more people from down under one way or the other, I just felt like there was a lot of kind of like, well, this was really important to me, so I followed up on it. And I don't know if maybe they're just not communicating their insecurity and neurosis the way I would. Like, really? Because I thought, and then I wondered, and then I did it, and then I was scared that it wasn't good, so I didn't do it anymore. But then I came back to it because I felt passionate about it. Like, there's just something sort of like...
I feel like that's what I'm like, though. I feel like
then,
I'm more
when
like
when you were 18,
like,
but then you came here, and then you've worked ever since.
Yeah, but then I left again and had a nervous breakdown and had to get
myself really?
Together
did you feel
and
like,
come back. Yeah.
Oh, you
I
did?
Went,
well, how old?
Like, crazy. Like, when I came here... After I came here when I was 18.
You had the 3 months.
Yeah, and it was awful. And it did not go well, and I wasn't, you know, so it wasn't like I was like, yes, I'm gonna. It was tough.
Okay.
But I think something about, I don't know, you come from so far away in New Zealand and Australia, like we're so isolated down there. Like it's really, and it's a big trip to get anywhere else.
Yeah.
So you have to really be prepared.
To have made that journey.
And you
maybe
have to
that's
have, like,
the people that come out of it.
And,
yeah.
You know, because it's the exchange rate used to be so terrible.
Yeah.
You just have to really. So maybe that's what it is more than anything. Like if you're an American and you come to Los Angeles and you know, you can go home. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
You can go home and try again. But if you come like all that way,
you know what?
Really...
That makes sense to me. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that before, but that absolutely makes sense. Oh, you made me think of something else that I wanted. Well, okay. So it wasn't working. And so you went home, and then when did you come back, and how were you different, and how did you approach it differently?
I can't remember. I feel like I came back again for another audition or something, but then I went back to New Zealand and, I did an audition in New Zealand for a director I really respect. Her name is Gaylene Preston.
Mm-hmm.
And she just kind of stopped me halfway through and she was like, "What is wrong with you?" And I was like, I just lost it in this audition.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh my God, this is where I went to Los Angeles and I hated it and I feel really insecure and I hate my boyfriend and I'm really fat." Like I just poured all this stuff out to her and she was like, "Okay. Here's what you do. You make a list of everything that's making you unhappy, and then you think, how can I change this? And then you make a little separate list of all the things you can do to change it. Like, what's one thing?" I was like, "I feel like I have this terrible voice." And she was like, "Okay, so do voice lessons. Here's a teacher I really like."
Mm-hmm.
"Like, what's wrong with your relationship?" You know, and so she was so amazing.
Yeah.
And she said, "Go away. I'm going to audition you again," she said, "in 6 months."
Uh-huh. Interesting.
And I came back. It was
for
like
the same
mission.
Thing or just
for
something
the same
totally
thing. And then they never got funding and the movie was never made, which is a tragedy. It was this amazing, amazing movie. But she changed my life, this woman. Just from this one. Just
isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Because I had been in Los Angeles and just people were very dismissive. You know, I was not building on any kind of momentum or whatever you're supposed to do. Like, I was in a movie that had come out years ago. I wasn't especially pretty or anything. I didn't, you know, it was tough.
I don't know if I can agree with that, but okay.
No, but you know, I just didn't really have.
You weren't working the Hollywood polish and glam.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would come into the room and people would sort of be like, "Oh, great. Like, what's this?"
That's so crazy.
Yeah. And so she just gave me a different outlook, and it was the first time I really realized, like, oh, this is within my control. Like, I started to feel kind of...
It's not just stuff happening to you that you're stuck with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was good for me in a lot of different ways. She really helped me a lot. And then I just had a different perspective. And the next time I came back, I just felt... I also felt a little bit more like I didn't really care. Like, I just felt so much happier in my life. And like, I was sort of working out what I wanted to do. And I thought, well, I'll do some auditions. I'll see how it goes. Whatever. I can go home and I can try to do plays. And I wasn't. And then I got a movie and it was this movie Ever After. And then.
Easy. I think that was just the door, the wind slamming the door shut.
So protective.
Yeah. You're very tough, Scott.
He's very sweet.
Scotty. It's nothing. Oh, he's not sure. He's not sure.
He has a funny look on his face.
Oh,
he's
man.
Like, whoa. Anyway, so then it was funny. And then I sort of started working pretty steadily after that.
That's so amazing. And so you went back to her after 6 months. Did you tell her? I need you to know how much of a.
I totally did. And I talk about it all the time because it was the. She is the person who changed my life. She's the person who had the greatest impact on me, really.
Yeah.
And just from this one, you know, we sort of have peripherally stayed in touch with each other. I did a movie with her daughter a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
Who's an amazing actress and, like, the coolest, obviously, with that person as your mom.
Right,
she's
right.
She's, like, the coolest girl you could imagine.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then... It's funny because I was going to bring up some stuff of like, but I'm a cheerleader. I love just because it's just a great movie about the sort of like the idea of being in high school and needing to be a certain way and then satirizing, you know, just the whole idea of like whether it's okay to be gay or not, and how all of our little like the caricatures of these roles that we kind of fall into in high school.
I know, I love that about
it. It's such a great movie, and oh, you got the cast is so perfect. Mm. And then I mean, guys, Melanie has done some of the best movies out there. So I just go check everything out, because it's really all we're seeing for one reason or another. But you were also just in Win-Win, which was another movie that for me, with the idea of this outsider kid and high school and the complicated relationships that you have with your parents as a teenager. And once again, I mean, you're just so good at playing. You could play anyone because you... Aww. You're so there's a vulnerability there that a lot of people can't access, I think, not just on screen or in a play or acting or anything, but like in their lives. I think people can't. I think it's scary. It's scary to access that place, because we all have it. And every time I see you in something, I think I just feel like you give me permission to kind of be raw, or to feel like, yeah, wait a minute. People get hurt, and people are afraid of being hurt, and people change after they get hurt, and all of that's so human. And I need to see that to feel okay about my brokenness, whatever that looks like. And I can't imagine that if that's true for me, it's not true for other people. And it's one thing to see a superhero movie where somebody is just like, you know, their vulnerability is like, they can't love a human. Isn't that a little lonely? You know what I mean? Like, but it's still somebody who's just sort of, you know, and so to see the what you bring to the table and your role in Win-Win especially, but you know, that's just because that's the most recent thing I saw you in. I don't even know what to say, but I want to like ask you something about that part of it or where that comes from, or, but I, you know, maybe we've already gotten there just by talking about
crazy I am.
Exactly. If anything has been proven in this podcast, it's that you're incredibly uncrazy and un-Hollywood and tainted by it all. But yeah, I mean, do you feel when you play a role like that, do you feel like, does that come home with you? Is it cathartic? Do you feel like, oh gosh, I just did a day of really kind of a sad day of playing a character who can't connect with her own son, and now I sort of feel that? Or do you walk away from work and feel elated and like, you know, you've sort of left it there and you've put it out there and you hope it was good and that's that?
It's interesting, like, without getting super actory, kind of the hope always for me is that it will help me sort of process some thing from my history or some relationship that I have. And
yeah,
I do this kind of like dream work acting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk a lot about that kind of thing and what it's bringing up in you and what you can hope to sort of heal yourself from it, you know.
Yeah.
So it all sounds a bit like funny, but that role particularly was very helpful for me emotionally.
Yeah.
With a particular relationship in my life, it helped me understand a little bit more how that person must be feeling and what they're going through, and it took a lot of anger away from me, and it was very it's always interesting, that kind of thing. But then at the same time, you know, you've been crying all day and you come home and you feel gross.
Sure.
There was a funny moment. It's the scene basically got cut out of the movie, but I have a moment where I like talk to Kyle, Alex's character, the teenage boy, and in the courtroom, and I ask him, like, does he know that I love him? And he can't like answer me because he doesn't know. And it was like such a heartbreaking moment for me. I know.
I would love to see that scene. That's amazing.
And just every time it would just like destroy me.
Yeah.
Because just thinking about like your own child just
not
honestly not being able to tell you that they know that you love, you know.
Yeah.
And so we were doing that scene and Tom McCarthy, the director, said that Alex came up to him like after we did one take, came up and was like, dude, I think she's really crying. Like, he was like so freaked out.
What do we do about this guy? Yeah, she's really upset.
I think she's really crying.
And oh, Tom was that's like,
it's
really...
kind of her job. Because, you know, there wasn't anything else emotional really in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, people were acting and being very real, but.
Oh, yeah, that would be the kind of for him, because he didn't have much experience either,
he
right?
He never had done any acting
before. So interesting. What a full circle, accidental.
I know.
Oh, my gosh,
really
that's amazing. Yeah.
He did such an amazing job. He's
oh, it's astonishing. Well, that's what's so great about it, too, is that I would say, and I know I'm going to do this, because I want to see that film again. But like, if you guys get a chance to watch Heavenly Creatures and to watch Win Win back to back, I think that would be such a fun, cool exercise. Not exercise, but like, it would be a cool thing to do because you kind of get a sense. Because this kid's performance, this Alex's performance, is
so good.
It's just so, and they're very similar because they're so honest and they're so authentic that there just isn't anything to compare them to. They're just living in their own space, your performance and his, and there's something really, there's a nice parallel there that you actually will see on the screen when you guys watch it. I love what you said about the idea of empathy, and I love the idea of being able to use your work to understand relationships better.
Yeah.
Is there a way we can put that for young women who aren't necessarily doing what we do, but that's just something you kind of tuck away in your mind? Because I've been feeling that a lot lately, just that the sense of empathy of like, if we have the opportunity to work, like to put the anger on the shelf just long enough to see someone else's point of view.
Yeah.
It helps you so much, right?
It really, really does. I think that's the most helpful thing. It's, you know, it's been a really great tool in all my relationships. It's just to sort of like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's as an actor, you're used to kind of imagining someone else's point of view and putting yourself in a different person's shoes. But I, you know, any person can do that and just sort of really try to imagine yourself as that person. And what are they saying? You know, you hear things in a particular way and that's not what people are saying.
Yeah.
You know, the things I think my husband is saying to me, it's not at all what he's trying to tell me, you know, but it's filtered through years of, you know, your own insecurities and I don't know. But just taking the time for yourself to really sort of process what a relationship means to you, and even if you just write in a journal about it, and the more you sort of explore your own feelings towards people, then, you know, it helps to sort of be able to articulate it to yourself. And
I totally agree. I think the idea of getting your relationships getting better through understanding yourself in an unnarcissistic way is only going to help you grow as a person. And that's something that we all do for the rest of our lives, not just as young people. I think that's about an hour and I cannot thank you enough.
Oh, no,
that was so wonderful.
It was really fun.
I'm so proud to know you. And,
I'm proud to know you. I think you're great.
And that's it for the podcast this time, guys. As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.